Mr. Quorum, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Here.
Atkins here. Berryhill. Leyva.
Here.
Leyva here. Cannella.
Here.
Cannella here. De Leon.
Here.
De Leon here.
Okay, we've established a quorum. Members, we have file item number one. We're going to skip over two, one, three through five. One, three through five. We have a motion made by Ms. Atkins. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Motion passes. Let's go to file item number two. We're going to start with Kelly Hargraves, Chief Deputy Director, Department Rehabilitation. Kelly Hargraves? Ms. Hargraves, I hope I pronounced it correctly.
Hargreaves.
Ms. Hargreaves, well, welcome. Why don't we do this? Why don't you present any family members or loved ones, and we'll go to a short bio, and then after your bio, we'll go to questions and answers by the members.
Okay,
thank you. Okay. My husband, who's been by my side for 26 years, Marty, and behind him, my sister Kathy, niece Alexandra, Sharon, my brother Toby, and behind Catherine Campisi is my best friend Lisa, and daughter Kelsey, and who am I missing? Okay, I'm just gonna say, oh, and behind my sister Kathy is my sister Jennifer, great nephew, I'm aging myself now, Emery, and his mother Tanya.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Well, won't you speak a little about yourself and welcome all, and we'll go to questions and answers.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for considering me for confirmation. I'm grateful to the governor for the appointment and grateful to my family for the support. The foundation of my passion for this position is that I lived in poverty as a child, at times without food and care. And it was hard to imagine going to college, let alone law school. But with the support of others, I was able to go from needing an advocate to being an advocate. So I've enjoyed a great career for 30 years, mostly in state service. Really appreciate being a public servant and building the public's trust through transparency and prudent spending. I believe in the department's mission of employment, independence, and equality for persons with disabilities, of whom one in three live in poverty, as I did. And just as I needed to lean on others at times to be where I am today, I'm devoted to doing the same for others. I also believe in the incredible staff, 1,800 people who work for the Department of Rehabilitation and all the stakeholders we work with in pursuit of our mission.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hargreaves. Questions and answers from the members. Ms. Leyva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Good afternoon, Ms. Hargreaves. It was wonderful to meet with you yesterday. I think you bring a wealth of experience to this position. It's a big position, and I appreciate that you are willing to take on the challenge. We talked a little bit about the difficulty of encouraging businesses to hire people with disabilities, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that, and then also I want you to talk about the internship versus taking a test. I thought that was really a unique way to evaluate someone.
Okay, thank you, Senator Leyva, and I enjoyed our talk too. We do find that, you know, some businesses are reluctant to hire people with disabilities. There are different ways that people, for instance, with learning disabilities, learn different ways that they can get through the interview process. And we have a workforce development section that is working through with our employment coordinators to engage more with business than we have in the past, to learn what the skills are that each business needs, and to develop those skills in the consumers who come to us. Some of the ways that we can promote employment is by supporting internships, paid internships, where both youth as well as adults with disabilities can work in an integrated setting with employers and prove that they have the talents and the potential to work, to be as productive and as much of a contributing person to the workforce. One of the opportunities through an internship, as you and I talked about yesterday, is Senator Hancock's bill, which provides paid internships to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities in lieu of a written test. So up to 6 months in state service, our department has worked with the California Department of Human Resources to develop the program, encourage our state colleagues to hire people with developmental disabilities, modify jobs so that they can be as successful as possible.
That's great. I also really appreciated you talking about bringing creativity to this job and your role. And I loved the same-day service model that you talked about, and I was wondering if you could share that with everyone.
Sure. We, like I think many state agencies, are a product of many years of controls and processes, and at times that's hindered our creativity. And we're in a line of work where being able to adapt to the individual's needs is really important. Mm-hmm. So we are really changing our culture to be more creative and to look at different ways of doing business. Our staff work very, very hard. I don't know that they can work any harder. So we know we have to do something completely differently. And we're fostering innovation in the department and looking at ways of doing things more simply.
Very good. Thank you for the passion that you bring to this job.
Thank you.
No more questions, Mr. Pro Tem.
Thank you very much, Senator Leyva. Ms. Atkins.
Thank you very much, and it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here today. In terms, to follow along with Ms. Leyva's question, in terms of the workforce challenges and how you get businesses engaged and more businesses, and you've been in public service a long time, is there any integration with the workforce development that you do and the Workforce Investment Board? Are there ways to link? Is there existing relationships?
There's always been a relationship. There's a closer relationship now. And by the way, Senator Atkins, it's a pleasure to meet you, too.
Thank you.
We are, for the first time, the director of the Department of Rehabilitation is actually a member of the California Workforce Development Board. And we're involved in many efforts with the Workforce Board. Through the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act of 2014, our performance measures actually became similar to the general workforce, so the Employment Development Department. So that's new for us. We'll be first issuing our performance measures in October to see how we do in comparison with the general workforce. But we are working more closely. We are looking at sector strategies along with the general workforce. And our annual state plan, for the first time, we were part of a unified state plan with the other workforce.
Okay. I think about all of the local and regional workforce investment boards under the Workforce Investment Act and how they all have businesses, small and large. And I don't know. I served on that board locally, and I don't know what the links and the nexus is, but it seems to me when you're looking for businesses, these are businesses engaged in civic work in their communities, so they might be more of a natural advocate. So I connect in bureaucracies and the dots in government is always helpful. And along those lines, in terms of housing, is there a link or any conversations between housing and community development as we try to put money into programs that support permanent supportive housing, Housing First, special needs housing, and just affordable housing?
Right. Yeah, well, we are so fortunate to partner with the 28 independent living centers that provide the support for people with disabilities to remain in the community. We know particularly in our San Francisco district office, there's a lot of concern with people being able to live independently there because of the cost of living. And many people who begin working with the Department for Services stop working because they're fearful that even when they are off Social Security that they won't be able to afford housing. So it continues to be a great concern for us, and we really do try to collaborate with all the other public and private entities that are also committed to helping people with disabilities.
Well, thank you. I think it speaks to, as I'm thinking about this work we need to do to maybe force those alliances a little better, because if we have boards and advisory boards, through Prop 63 and the No Place Like Home and other policy things attached to resources and money that we're putting forward, we should make sure that there is either representation or there is some more direct link, because I think some of those boards are going to be making recommendations for where in the state monies need to be spent and what types of dearth of housing for what populations of people. And it sounds to me like we need to make a better link, but that's our role as much as yours.
Well, we welcome being part of that.
We'll follow up on that. Thank you. Lastly, I'm just curious in terms of the wait list. I looked at a lot of the information provided to me by staff, which was really excellent in terms of understanding the programs. In terms of consumers, how many wait lists are we talking for DOR services?
Well, we're proud to say that right now there's no wait list.
Wow.
And we're accepting every application up through June of this year, and we hope things will remain that healthy. We do maximize our resources to serve as many as we can. It's not always the case, but we're happy that it's the case right now.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Atkins. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. So the governor's proposed budget will cut $705,000 to three independent living centers, which serve lots of individuals in my district. I don't know why. I understand from your email that those are federally funded independent living centers, but they've obviously been using this money to balance out the funding. Do you have a concern that these centers are going to lose that money? I mean, they're not going to be able to provide the same services, it seems. I mean, do you have an opinion on that? Do you think that they should be cut? If they are, I know it's done in the budget process, but would it be better to spread that pain amongst all the independent living centers so that the ones in my district can at least provide a basic level of service?
We are sensitive to the concerns of the ILs. We share it as well, that there should be an equitable proportionate of both federal and state funds, and that the law that provided that the three, including the one in your area that does not get the state funding, was exempt from the state funding, was at a time when they received federal funds and the others did not. So I know that times have changed, and we know that Senator Salas is working on a bill with the independent living centers. We are also working with all 28 of the independent living centers to come up with a formula that will be fair, that will take into account population served and geography.
Well, you guys are advocates as well. I'm sure you get involved in the budget process. I think if you're concerned that they're going to lose that funding, they won't be able to provide those services, I hope that you'll reach out to the administration and let them know that. So I'm assuming you haven't done that at this point.
We are talking with the Department of Finance. We're talking with all the independent living centers, and they did acknowledge at our last budget hearing that we're working with them.
Okay, and you're working with them to say that please don't cut that money, or?
It's not in the governor's budget, and we know that the governor had to make some very, very tough calls. Last year was the only year that $705,000 augmentation existed. So we know there needs to be a long-term fix.
Okay, so you're advocating to get the money in there?
No, we're not advocating to get the money in there. We are advocating to having an equitable funding stream for all 28.
Okay, which would provide money for those three independent living centers. So you're being careful with your answer. So I guess I want to come in from you to say, yes, this is a problem. These independent living centers need the money to provide basic level of services. So you may not be advocating specifically for the $705,000, but you do believe let me ask you a question. Will they have to cut critical services if that money's cut?
I don't know if they have to cut services, because I don't know, since it was a one-time augmentation last year, I don't know what they depended on. The representative for the ILC in your area did acknowledge that it is a much deeper issue than the $235,000 per independent living center. That's a flat fee. I think anything that's just flat is problematic, because it doesn't take into account the number of people served.
Okay, so the formula that you're working on would just say, okay, there's this much money, let's spread it amongst all of them, or let's get more money so that we can bring the level of service up.
Yes, we want all 28 to have a distribution that's fair.
Okay, those who are in support of today's nominee that's before us, come up to the microphone. Those who are in support. I'm going to ask you to be very brief. Just state your name, who you represent, and a comment or two.
I'm Andy Mutrick. I'm the Executive Director of Disability Rights Advocates in Berkeley, and I've worked with Ms. Hargreaves for over 5 years, really closely on issues impacting people with disabilities and employment. She's an incredible advocate on behalf of people with disabilities. Within her role at the department, she demonstrates the highest level of integrity, and it's my honor to support her.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Next witness in support. Come on up, folks. If you could, Michael, please help them form the line so that we can move this more swiftly.
Yeah. Will Sanford with Futures Explored, one of the community rehab partners that partners with the Department of Rehabilitation over the last 30 years. We're actually very excited to be able to help kick off SB 644 and try and get folks hired into state service. In the ideal world, there would be 6,000 folks with developmental disabilities in state employment to match the normal population. So we have a few to go.
Thank you very much. Next witness in support. Next witness in support.
Katharina Gregana on behalf of Junior Blind in support of the appointment of Ms. Hargreaves. Thank you.
Next witness in support. I think we have one last one. Or three more. Okay. That's okay.
Hello. Catherine Campisi, former director of the Department of Rehabilitation, and I can take credit for having hired Kelly to the department. And so obviously I'm here in support of her confirmation. I'm also president of the Association of California State Employees with Disabilities. It's a mouthful. And Department of Rehabilitation works closely with ACSED, along with CalHR and the State Personnel Board. We did a year-long project, a joint recommendation on increasing employment of persons with disabilities in state service. And I thank very much Senator Atkins for her comments. We really would appreciate your support, along with that of DOR and the other departments, in working together to get more people with disabilities into employment, and particularly in state government, which has an excellent infrastructure for support. So we strongly support Kelly. She's a great partner. She does think creatively. She's bringing a lot of energy and passion to her position. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next witness in support.
I am Robert Benton, I'm a long-time advocate. I call my job in vehicle.
Robert Benson on behalf of the California Person-Centered Advocacy Partnership. I support Kelly Hargreaves.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back again, Mr. Benson. Next witness?
I guess I'm the last one.
There we go.
Marty Moto, California Disability Senior Community Action Network, and also the California Partnership, and also a family member. My older sister had developmental disabilities. Strongly support Kelly's confirmation. She has, I've known her for well over 10 years, working with her at the department under different directors. She has been a compelling, very compassionate force there, always responsive in working with stakeholders, always good about being creative, as others have mentioned, in trying to solve problems. And especially now that we're working on competitive integrated employment, we're looking at transitional youth programs for people with disabilities, especially developmental disabilities. It's so critical. And also, we look forward to working with you and also with the director of the department on other issues facing the department as we move forward, including the issue of trying to find additional resources for people with traumatic brain injuries, also the issues of the independent living centers that Senator Cannella mentioned, and also strongly want to just mention, strongly support the comments that you made, Senator Atkins, regarding a more visible presence on some of these other initiatives like No Place Like Home. It's so important that the disability community is there and present, but strong support, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Other witnesses in support, seeing none, those in opposition. Also seeing no opposition, do we have a motion made for today's confirmation? We have a motion made by Ms. Atkins. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. DeLeon.
Aye.
DeLeon, aye.
Ms. Hargreaves, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have one last confirmation before us. That is number 2B. That is Ms. Miriam Ingenito. Come on up, please. This is the Director of Fiscal.
Thank you.
We'll let the room settle a bit. We'll wait a few moments. Okay, why don't we start? Please introduce friends, family, loved ones, and we'll go into Q&A.
Wonderful, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I have quite a few family members here with me today. I'm going to start with my husband, Robert, who many of you may know, who has, you know, really been my rock always, and anything that I've achieved, it's because he's been there right by my side, and so that's just wonderful. My two daughters, Carolina and Jacqueline.
Carolina, oh, okay.
We've grown up here, it feels like.
Which one's Carolina and which one's
Carolina
Jacqueline?
Carolina is 13. Stand up, Carolina. And then Jacqueline is 11.
Jacqueline's 11 and Carolina's 13.
These girls keep me honest.
Carolina's a mini you, you know?
Yeah, mini me's.
Yeah.
I can't.
Well, welcome, girls. Welcome.
And then I have my in-laws here who moved from Florida to be here with us. And I have to say that Bob and Fran and Janito, I joke with the siblings that I was the least objectionable outlaw. Yes. So when they were picking a place to relocate, I feel like I won the lottery. And then, of course, I have my parents here today, Giuseppe and Emily Barcelona.
Welcome.
So my mother is a first-generation Puerto Rican Cuban-American.
Okay.
And my father emigrated to the United States when he was 23 years old from Sicily.
I was going
to
say, guess where? Giuseppe, right? You know, the name of Giuseppe. Welcome. Yeah.
And really some great life lessons from my parents to just through their example, to be courageous, to take chances, even in the face of the unknown, to be tenacious. To not give up, even when folks are telling you, you can't go there, you can't do that. To really be generous with my knowledge, with myself, with my resources, and not just to give from the fat, but to really give from my core. And of course, most importantly, it was in all things, remember that your word is your bond, and that it is with great integrity that I must always conduct my life. And again, for the benefit of my two daughters that I hope learn those lessons as well from the example that Robert and I provide. So so yes, I am blessed to have my family here today, and I'm truly honored to be sitting before you today as the governor's appointee for the director of the Department of Fiscal. I started my career in state service here, actually. My first interview was next door as a Senate fellow. And I worked for Senator, Senator Milton Marks and the Senate Committee on Criminal Procedure, to date myself. That was about 23 years ago. And I have worked in both the legislative and the executive branches, almost even Stephen. And it has been just a tremendous journey for me and a great honor to really serve the people of the state of California in every capacity that I've been so privileged to work. And so now the Department of Fiscal, it's the culmination of a lot of the skills that I've picked up along the way. The Fiscal system in the Department of Fiscal is just not an IT modernization project. We're truly modernizing. We're transforming the way that California does business. The backbone, the accounting, the budgeting, the procurement, really how we think about how we do business here in California. And that, at the end of the day, has real benefits to the legislature, to those people making the policies, the administrators, those of us that are in the administration that have to implement the laws and be responsible for the state's resources, have that fiduciary responsibility, as well as to the general public who wants to know where their funds are and that what they see and what they read, that there's some factual, there's consistency in the numbers across the board. So it's an exciting time in the state, and I'm just really honored to be here. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your testimony. Why don't we start? We'll go the opposite way today. Well, Ms. Atkins.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. I've heard incredible things about you from many people, so it's good to meet you finally. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to sit with you separately. From an overview perspective, I am wondering about timeline and slippage in terms of bringing departments on board, and just kind of want to get your sense of how you think that's going, and you know, kind of the challenge of staying on a timeline. And
right. So, thank you for the question. It's It's a big project. So I have to say that, first off, that FISCAL is an incredibly successful project that implemented already has been statewide budgeting. So not only has the governor been able to produce his budget using the data in FISCAL from all the departments producing the budget in Jan 10, but last year, for the first time, we were able to produce the same level of detail with the enacted budget, which, of course, is of the two documents, is the more important to have a finer level of detail. And so we've already brought on the budgeting. We've brought on procurement. So if you are selling goods or services to the state of California, you're already utilizing FISCAL. And the way we got here was that we were able to focus on the quality and not so much getting it done by a certain time. And so we have the remaining functionality is the book of record for the state of California. So that's the control functions, as well as the banking, the cash management that the treasurer has. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, just a couple of months ago, before my steering committee, we split that schedule further. So instead of the book of record and all of the reports that are derived from that being delivered in July, we are now looking to provide the book of record, and then we are going to provide the reports down the road in probably the first quarter or so of the next fiscal year. And that enables us to be able to test and find any defects before we go live at the system. Mm-hmm. The treasurer will be bringing on about $2 trillion worth of banking transactions, and the controller will be bringing on $500 billion of accounting. So it's really important that at the end of the day, the primary focus is on the quality of the product. At this time, I don't see us moving the schedule further than the 17 and the 18 timeline that we have. But again, we're in that final phase of this two-year period to bring the controller and the treasurer on. And if at the end of this testing period, we decide that collectively, the controller as well as the rest of my steering committee, that there's too much risk or that it cannot be mitigated, then we will look to bring on a smaller portion of the work or bring it out a little bit later. And so it's focusing on the quality, but at this time we're on track, and I feel like I need to knock on wood. So, but it's every go live has had to have a little bit of flexibility in that schedule.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you say it's got to be done right, and so if we need more time rather than to go live, and this is a complicated process, and when you are a state this size, and when you talk about IT services, and so in terms of the services, you've got the technical people working with the departments in terms of their specific needs. So all of that is being done as you go division by department by department to make sure that the practical users are actually working with the design of what each.
So the fundamental design of the system was created by the Department of General Services, the Department of Finance, the State Controller's Office,
right,
and the State Treasurer's Office.
Got it.
And then we've been onboarding, bringing on departments in waves or releases. And so we started off, with, I think there was 9 in that original group, and we've had a number of different sized releases since then. One of the things that changed significantly when I came on was the way that we engaged with the departments. That it was originally presented to, and I was the department that asked to move forward into FISCAL because we wanted, to change our accounting practices. But it was kind of the solution was given to us without a full understanding from FISCAL of the nuances of what the day-to-day business was. And so when I came to FISCAL, when I was asked to come over to the department, that was one of the first things that we changed, was that in earlier engagement with departments to really understand what it is that they need, what are their unique structures or situations that this system of accounting needs to be able to handle. Again, we don't want it customized by 154 departments. So to the extent that they need to change business processes, that's one thing. But it's different if this is how you have to account for federal funds, or this is how you have to receive cash in the system. We need to be able to be flexible enough to meet those needs. And we've had to move some departments as a result of that. So you know, to a different release after sitting and evaluating them. We're going, you know, that's going to be something that's going to take us a little longer to solution. Let's take the time and do it right.
So you're obviously bringing departments online. DGS is a partner. Are they on yet?
Yes, they are online. So they brought over their activity-based management system in the 2016 release, and that's their system that they bill back. They get funded through charging other departments for their services, essentially. And so that accounting system is online. And then they also do the books and the... It's either budgeting or accounting or both for a number of smaller departments through their contracted fiscal services office, and most of the contracted fiscal services entities are also utilizing Fiscal.
So can I just ask, that being the case, does that mean payment to vendors should be timely and there should be no problems with people getting paid?
So this is an excellent question, and something that we have found is that there is a form that you are required to fill out to do business in the state of California, and it's a standard 204 if you want to know. And in order to receive a payment, under existing law, under existing policy prior to Fiscal, you are required to have one of those so that we could track for tax purposes and other, you know, information that the payment is going to a real person and who that person is. What we have found is that not everybody that was receiving payments from the state could produce a 204. And so until they could do that, the system won't let you send out a check. And so while it's frustrating to many small businesses and actually to members that sit on small boards and conservancies that are not, I suppose
that
as well.
So you've heard of these concerns.
Okay. That haven't been able to receive their per diem payments, for example.
Or payment for staff who work in these agencies who... So I may follow up with you offline on this.
I'd be happy to.
Because if the system is supposed to be unveiled in a way that catches these issues and glitches, I have some concerns. But I think overall, in light of what we're doing here, thank you for helping answer a question or two. And I certainly think this is critically important. And certainly it sounds like you're doing it in a way that has the right people at the table, your advisory group or your
committee.
Right, thank you, is important. So I just appreciate the fact that this is being done. It costs a lot of money. So it's my hope that we get it right, and I really appreciate the attention, focus, and obviously the dedication and passion you put into it. And I may follow up offline on some of these other
Absolutely.
Questions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Atkins. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. We actually just had a discussion about 20 minutes ago, and you answered all my questions, so I look forward to supporting you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Ms. Leva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Good afternoon, Ms. Ingenito. Very nice to see you again. I just have to say for the record that I felt very lucky that I got to meet Ms. Hargreaves and then you right afterwards, and both of you bring a sense of commitment and passion and enthusiasm to both of the jobs that you're going to be doing. So thank you for giving me hope for the future. The only thing I really wanted to ask you to discuss a little bit for the record is we talked a little bit about that it's difficult to recruit IT folks because of the pay, but you had some interesting points on how you're trying to market those positions. So if you would elaborate on that.
Thank you. IT positions are hard to fill statewide, but I'd like to, we've been marketing, if you will, the Department of Fiscal as really a place where you can be innovative. And for IT, that's really exciting, especially for the millennial generation coming up. So it's not government as it always has been. We're reinventing government. We're reinventing how we do our business. And that's exciting. We're trying to give the staff the ability to be creative, to say, okay, we need this to be the end product. I need to know, you know, to produce the budgetary legal report. But how do I go about doing that? Is there a more efficient way? And along the way, for those of us that are, you know, that love the policy, it's
you get to sit down and go, okay, well, we've done it this way because we didn't have the technology in the past. It's okay to go in and change those policies. It's okay to go in and even come to the legislature and ask for a change in statute to really modernize this. I think that also we try to be a place that, you know, in addition to the stability that a state job will give you versus in the private sector and the benefits that we have, that I'm trying to make Fiscal a place that that the young tech folks want to be there. So I was commenting to Senator Leyva that it was a little jarring at first when I started, when you walk into the department and folks aren't in suits and ties and, you know, even dress slacks. I mean, it's more casual down to sometimes you get the jeans and the hoodies, but it's okay. And getting past, you know, mm-hmm. making it more rigid inside, how we set up our cubicles, making it more collaborative, and it has been really rewarding, and it's the first true matrix organization that the state has that's ongoing. So for projects, you bring people together, you develop, you know, your project, and then you go away. But with Fiscal, I have those four partners that are going to be there with me, with Fiscal the whole time. And so it's been fun to try to make government really attractive, that, you know, doing the public good is in and of itself is rewarding.
Well, we all appreciate that. Please keep making us look attractive to people. We appreciate that. No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem.
Thank you, Ms. Leyva. Any other further questions or commentaries from the members? Seeing none, why don't we go to those who are in support of today's nominee? Those in support, okay, we'll be very brief. Those in opposition, seeing none as well, too. Madam Secretary, before we do that, why don't we entertain a motion? Do we have a motion? We have a motion made by Mr. Vice Chair. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. DeLeon.
Aye.
DeLeon, aye.
Ms. Ingenito, congratulations to you.
Thank
and your
you.
Family. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, members, this meeting is adjourned.